Whoa, this is heavy.
You're paying for shipping. One ping only, please.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we gonna do now?
What about breakfast?
We've already had it.
We've had one, yes. What about second breakfast?
The beef, but a map, the boot, the beef.
Who knows? In a thousand years, even you may be worth something.
Son of a...
Oh, behave. Yeah.
But I'm sorry.
Never apologize, mister. It's a sign of weakness.
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
1, 2, 3.
I will fucking destroy you.
Junior?
Yes, sir.
Shoot, Junior.
You fly back to school now, little starling. Fly away.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki, motherfucker.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
That's a magic number.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Holmes Movies Podcast, where in this new podcast series, we are going to be looking at movie trilogies. I nearly said Holmes Movies Trilogies, but that was a bit of a blooper.
It's not a blooper if you didn't say it. You just blooped yourself. You're like, I nearly trod on that landmine, and then you'd go over and put your foot on it. Like, what? Why'd you do that? It's like, hello, Mr. Fuchs. I nearly called you Mr. Fuck, but I'm glad I didn't.
Yeah. Okay. Hi, I'm Anders. I guess you guys already know that by now if you've been listening to us for a while.
Oh, God. If you've been listening to us for a while, I'm really sorry. Like, I don't know. But we're trying a new format. You've been through all the other Holmes movie seasons. We've been doing this for years. You realize that?
Yeah, like, we've been nearly doing this for...
Many years.
Yeah, I think it's been 9 years since we've been doing this.
Bloody hell. Well, look, we started off just talking about films. Then we did, we did a couple of specials. We did the Bond backwards. Remember that? Yeah. We've done...
Nice little COVID project.
We did the COVID, the Holmes Movies Recommends. We've done Oscars. We've done top tens. But now we're doing trilogies because films, there are a lot of film trilogies out there. Some of these trilogies become... more than trilogies. Some spawn other trilogies. The films that we're talking about today are an example of that, where there's an original trilogy that's perfect, and then they added another one for no good reason. But we just discount that because I think everyone can agree that the Toy Story trilogy is a trilogy. And if you disagree, you can write in at holmesmoviespodcast@gmail.com and we can have a discussion, which will probably just involve me telling you to shut up. But it is a fine trilogy, and it is one of the most, I think, coherent trilogies in all of cinema. And I think maybe the best example of an animated franchise, probably.
Yeah.
Am I missing something? Yeah.
Yeah. No, I would agree with that. I mean, it's also just like, okay, 1995 was when Toy Story came out. This was like a really big deal because it was a Pixar animation studios film. Now they're sort of slightly owned by Disney, but they sort of worked on, you know, with Disney as partners. So this was like their first big thing. It was the brainchild of John Lasseter and Pete Docter and Andrew Stanton, those and Joe Ranth, those guys were like the guys who, you know, they started Pixar. They did a bunch of short films like
the jumpy lamp thing.
Yeah, Tin Toy, which won Best Animation Short at the Oscars in 1989. And Steve Jobs, he helped get them started.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about him. One thing also,
but looking at the style of the animation and like before, if you're looking at a lot of the animation films that came before that, you know, it was always hand drawn. It was always, that was the classical way of doing it. But this showed that you could do what are you wearing? Is that your eclipse?
Those are my eclipse glasses. I just put them on for no reason. Sorry. I can't see anything. It's probably good, actually. This shows they work.
Yeah. Okay.
You look like
you're going to see a 3D film at some point.
which is relevant to Toy Story, of course.
Toy Story 3 came out in 3D because back in that day, it was every film was being post-converted into 3D. But anyway, what was I saying? Yes, so John Lasseter, who was, you know, he helped create Pixar, and he was the head of Pixar for a while, and then he also jumped over to Disney to be sort of head of development there. He's not working there anymore because of his very inappropriate behavior in the wake of the allegations against Harvey Weinstein back in 2017. And he saw the movie Tron with Jeff Bridges, and that film has a very unique animation live action style. And he realized that there was potential to, you know, tell stories, animated stories, in a very different kind of way, and, you know, do it through the computer. And then thus Toy Story was born. But they had done a few other shorts before that, like the ones we've just mentioned. You know, they're really good. You can actually watch them on Disney Plus. The Adventures of Andre, Wally and B, Luxo Jr., Red's Dream, Tin Toy, Knick Knack, all those kind of came beforehand, and they really sort of
Knick Knack, like the guy from Man with the Golden Gun.
Yeah, it's called Knick Knack, but it's about a snow globe snowman who wants to join the other travel souvenirs in that are having a party, but he can't get out of his glass dome, and that was kind of like the precursor for Toy Story.
It's like Citizen Kane on like acid or something. You know, the thing about Pixar is they started out as just like a digital imaging. They weren't a studio. They started out as just like how, you know, they were making digital images, I guess, for like business purposes. I don't know.
Exactly, yeah.
And like these animations that they started making were kind of this is my understanding of it, were a sort of demonstration to potential customers about what the software was capable of. And then they were like, well, hang on a minute, we're so good at making these animations, this is what we do now. It's just, it's like one of the great success stories of the 90s, isn't it? Like, it's like, yeah. And it's such a 90s success story because it's all about computers and making a shit ton of money and like Steve Jobs. But it's what I really like about it is it's not like the way in which like the internet and the world of tech has become like just thoroughly enshittened in the last sort of decades. Like it feels like it's this. It feels so much more optimistic. The story of Pixar and just the product. I mean, the miracle of the first 10 years of Pixar, where they basically don't make a bad film, and they make six or seven, well, at least like a handful of absolute classics. I mean, you've got the first two the first three Toy Stories. You know, they were all made in that 10. Wait,
Toy Story 1 came out in 1995, and then they followed that with A Bug's Life, which came out in 1998. Then Toy Story 2 came out in 1999. Monsters Inc. in 2001. Finding Nemo in 2003. The Incredibles 2004. Cars 2006. Ratatouille 2007. Wall-E 2008, Up 2009, and then Toy Story 3 came out in 2010.
Okay, so in 15 years, say, they've made like half a dozen fucking classic animations.
Yeah.
Like Ratatouille is amazing. Toy Story 3 is amazing. Obviously, we'll talk about that. But apart from the Toy Story films, I just love Ratatouille. Finding Nemo is beautiful. The first bit of Up is good, but then it goes off a cliff, literally. I mean, the first bit of Up is not good. It's sublime. The rest of Up is fine. It's a good movie. It's just that the first bit of the film is just like jaw-dropping. You had to pause it because I was sobbing so much, I remember.
Yeah. It's so beautiful.
thank you. So we saw the first Toy Story, and this is like with the Star Wars conversation last week when we were children. We went to see Toy Story
I do remember that was actually the first film I remember seeing in the cinema.
That's a really cool first film to remember seeing in the cinema.
Yeah, I remember that, and I remember that very well. Like, and then when we got it on VHS or DVD, I just, you know, I kind of remember just seeing it was like. It just remember. I remember. And we might have been in Disneyland watching it, actually, or some Disney related area. Might have been.
We were in America.
We were in America.
We very well traveled, children. We watched Star Wars films in South Africa. Watching Toy Story in America. We were in Arizona, I think, visiting grandparents. I think. Yeah. But anyway, look, irrelevant. The point is, we saw it in the cinema when it came out, and. For me, it captured my childhood imagination like almost nothing else, because I don't think either of us was really sort of a sophisticated enough film viewer to get what was being done in terms of the animation, which I think later on I became very aware of as I started to compare it to the Disney films that were still coming out, like Mulan or whatever, and I was like, well, this does look really different. But it's just such a genius idea. And as children who had toys, I mean, bloody kids nowadays all don't own their phones, but we actually played with real toys, and we believed our toys had souls. And I think this story this was a film for kids and grown-ups like us who really love to invest objects with significance. I mean, I think about the toy you just gave my baby, which she loves, the owl or the penguin or whatever the fuck it is,
the gender fluid bird.
Yes, exactly. That's right, because sometimes we miss, yeah, the pronouns move around a little bit as well, but you know, she loves that thing, and like, oh, she's 7 months old, she doesn't know anything about it, like, she doesn't know what an owl is, but she knows, or whatever this bird is supposed to be,
yeah,
but she knows that she likes this thing more than like other things of a similar genre, and that's because it's been invested with something, not just by her but by other people. And I think toys, like objects like that, can, it's like on some really basic, like primitive level, we learn to love our, it's not say loving our possessions, it's loving objects that carry a certain amount of meaning. And I think play and comfort and like just fun, like, you know, what does a toy do to help the economy or to further the ambitions of a nation or to even like develop your mind? Most toys
shapes imaginations in many ways, if you
like. That's the thing, but it's also a pure leisure activity. I mean, it does there are of course studies that show that, yeah, playing with toys can develop your social skills and your mind and all that stuff, but it's such a like pure, it's a moment where you stop and you just are, and you, yeah, as you say, it unlocks imagination, it does all this other stuff. But I just love the fact that a toy represents only like joyful things, like a play, well, unless, you know, you're fighting over it with your little brother, but like, you know, you don't you know, it just represents this opportunity to just sort of be and enjoy it. And Toy Story captures that so fucking well, and the whole, and the, all the imagination stuff within it. And what I really like is that it doesn't hit you over the head with the social messaging stuff, but Andy's mum is a single mum.
Yeah.
Raising two kids on her own. And like,
well, do you want to hear a theory about who Andy's mum is?
Oh my God. Is she? Wait.
You know, in Toy Story 2, the "when somebody loved me, I..." That's, they think that, that's the woman.
I'm doing the Leonardo DiCaprio gif.
Yeah, the girl in that, a lot of people are theorizing that actually might be Andy's mom. Because she has a hat that's similar. The girl in the song, in that montage, has a hat that, you know, that Andy also has. So maybe, like, it passed on to him. So maybe there's,
Chuck,
like...
your whore mouth. That is an amazing... Wow.
I didn't come up with that theory.
I didn't know about that theory. That's an amazing theory. I love it. I'm adopting that. That's wonderful.
That sequence made Tom Hanks and Tim Allen cry when they saw it for the first time in the cinema. That whole sequence, that with the song.
It's devastating. But all the stuff about like a toy being lost, that thing in the first film where he says, "I'm lost." It's so like existentially heavy. Like, what does lost mean? You are lost. You have been misplaced. But you, like, you are still yourself. You are alive. But there is something. I'm lost. I don't have purpose. I have been severed from the thing that gives my life meaning, and to some extent is the condition of my existence. You know, it's such an amazingly, like, the way in which the morality in these films is kind of abstract and yet still so understandable. But it, unlike so much product for children, it doesn't come out and he's like, listen to the story, listen to the lesson here. You know, there's just like, there's just all this like really emotional stuff that gets processed, but sort of subtly in the background, until at certain moments in Toy Story, it just comes to the fore, like the bit where they're all nearly incinerated at the end of Toy Story 3, which becomes like a fucking, an allegory practically for the Holocaust, as well as like,
yeah,
all this other stuff, which is like, again, it's one of the, just, it shows what you can do with this vivid imagination, but also with the trust that you can have in your audience, that if you do something that's relatively subtle, that they'll still get it. And the thing is that I have the same emotional response to Toy Story as a grown-up although with a bit more sentiment now because of the passage of years, that I had as a child. Like, there's not anything that I didn't quote unquote get when I first watched Toy Story that I now get.
Yeah.
It's like everything was in the film. Everything landed. Everything was absorbed. It's just that now, I guess, I just feel more sentimental about it because I'm older.
Yeah. And also just, I mean, the good thing is that Pixar, I feel like, is a company that, I mean, of course, other animated studios, and they know who their audiences are, and they're making, you know, like, they're making films for children, but I also feel like animation can work for adults as well. And Pixar is one of those, you know, companies that is able to cater to both audiences. Like, kids will enjoy it, and then maybe parents will also, you know, be moved by certain aspects. Like, maybe they can sort of relate to certain things that happen. But I feel like, I don't know, I feel like when kids' films just cater to, you know, towards kids, you know, I feel like adults are just there like, oh, please let this film end. This is barbaric. I can't bear to watch this anymore. I'm glad my kid is enjoying this, but I don't like this. But like, I feel like that's the opposite with Pixar. It's like the kids are enjoying it, being like, oh, this is really good. And the dad or mom is like, it's really so good. Because I'm getting emotional.
Right. I mean, I feel like there's so much stuff that gets made for children. I mean, and I'm about to discover all of this in a big way. That's just shit. And that's just like fucking meth for babies. And I just love the fact that you can sit and watch Toy Story and you are both like, it's not that the film is, there are one or two moments in Pixar movies where there's like a wink, you know, like,
yeah,
to the audience. So, I mean, a classic one in Toy Story is when Buzz Lightyear has the Butte sticker on his ass.
Yeah, it's on his butt. Yeah, I remember that. That was funny.
Right. So, but anyway.
But there's also the bit where he's got the, I don't know, one of those like plastic dart thingies on his butt as well.
Yeah, but that's not like, that's just funny. I mean, a kid can find that funny, but I feel like the Butte thing, that's more of a like wink to the adults in the room and to the older children.
Yeah.
And then like, I feel like once in a while there's a sort of slight double entendre, but it's all like everyone is absorbing the same thing. Like the kids in the house, you're both absorbing. And when we talked about the movie, or when we would quote the movie to like our parents and stuff, it was like we're all talking about the same. We've all absorbed the same thing in the same way, and that's what's so perfect about it.
I think their storytelling mantra, the way that they come up with stories, whether the films turn out to be good or not, you know, is of course
they usually do.
It is subjective because people can maybe like Cars 2, for instance. And I mean, I think it's fine. It's not their greatest, but they always, that their mantra is character first. Like, who is the main character? What is their goal? And I think they really get down into that very well. Like, especially with something like Inside Out, which came out in 2015. That also, I really like that
film. Yeah,
I really like that film a lot too, and I'm also quite curious to see what the second film's going to be like, which is coming out soon as well.
Outside In?
No, it's new emotions, because the girl in the film is changing. She's becoming a teenager, so there's going to be new emotions like anxiety, who's played by Maya Hawke, Ethan Hawke's daughter. It's like, hi, I'm anxiety. Where can I put all my things? And she's carrying all this baggage, which I think is a nice little
joke. Didn't they do Turning Red?
They did do Turning Red. Yeah, the pandemic really kind of screwed up a lot of the releases of some of their films, because Soul with Jamie Foxx, which I think is a very beautiful film, directed by Pete Docter, who's now like the head of Pixar. That is a beautiful film. I wish, you know, the world was fine and we were able to see that on the big screen, as I wanted to see Luca on the big screen as well, because that was like the closest thing we could, you know, that was like the closest thing we had to going on holiday, because that took us to like Italy. And I was just like, oh my God, I really wish I was there. And it's also a very beautiful story, and also has some sort of allegorical things about being trans and also, you know, being homosexual and things like that, like, you know, homosexual relationships and things like that. Cause it has a very sort of like Call Me By Your Name vibe. Like, people could read into that in any way. That's, I don't know that it's interpreted in many different ways, but I like that people can look at something and see it in that sort of way. And then Turning Red, which is a very lovely story about, again, it's a story about Asian Americans in, I think it's in San Francisco or something that looks like San Francisco. And it's a woman, a girl dealing with puberty and a relationship with her mom and turning into a red panda. And it's a very lovely little film. I think it's a really, really good one.
Right. I mean, I feel like in those, I mean, there are ways in which I think First of all, I just love the fact that they are tackling subjects that get some people just like furious, and because they're the most popular business in town, essentially, in time when it comes to producing animated stuff still, you kind of can't fight it. And I just love, yeah, whatever way you want to smuggle in this kind of messaging about, you know, gender fluidity or same-sex relationships or puberty or whatever, it's like fantastic. You can't start too early, in my opinion. And, you know, I do really just admire like how they've managed it. And I think, like, from what I can tell, at least, they've navigated this sort of relationship with Disney pretty well. I feel like in some ways, like, Disney is sort of living on the past and sort of living off some of the reflected glory of Pixar. So it's like Pixar can just sort of, it's not like it's in Disney's shadow. It's just like it's plowing along doing it. So if anyone's in anyone's shadow, I feel like Disney's in Pixar's shadow. Who did Coco? Was that Disney on
that
their
was
own?
That was a Pixar, Disney Pixar film.
Coco's fucking amazing. Like, I haven't seen the film, but I've listened to the soundtrack like God knows how many times with my Lily's nieces, who, you know, genius songs. And the way that they, you know, the way they involve people who, what's the Hamilton guy? Sorry, my brain is porridge.
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
They involve people like that. It's just very, like, it shows that there is, that at least for now anyway, they're resisting a kind of stuffiness and getting too stuck. And then, but also that their name can pull in, like, the people at the top of their game. So anyway, we've gone off topic. Let's talk about Toy Story. Toy Story 1, brilliant film, 1995, fantastic story.
Can we just talk about how amazing the voice cast is for all these films? Because it's so good. Like, I mean, this was like the first time, you know, this was like my first Tom Hanks film, and I've become a fan of his ever since.
Really? Well, yeah, because you would have been four.
Yeah, because I was like four or five, so I didn't watch. I didn't know what he looked like up until the Saving Private Ryan poster came out. Because that was, you know, I was seven when that movie was released. So, you know, that was like the first time, oh, that's Woody. That's the guy that plays Woody.
Yeah. I'll go and see this film. Like, oh, my God. But yeah. It's,
not a kid's film. I mean,
Tim Allen is great as a voice actor. Motherfucking Rickles is in the Toy Story films. I mean, what's his name? The guy who plays Ham.
Oh, John Ratzenberger, who's like
Ratzenberger.
He's in every single Pixar film because he's like their mascot.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
The late great Jim Varney, who also had a fantastic voice as Slinky the dog. I think he was.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I think Toy Story 2 was one of his last films, and then there was a Disney film that he did called Atlantis, The Lost Empire, which I really like, with Michael J. Fox. That was one of his last films that he did. But there was a few occasions where someone who sounds just like him did like some additional voice stuff.
And there's Joan Cusack, of course, in Toy Story 2 and 3.
Kelsey Grammer, who plays
Prospector Pete.
Yeah, Stinky Pete.
Right. There's so many good people. Ned Beatty.
Yeah. Wayne Knight as the chicken guy.
The chicken? Wait.
The guy who kidnapped
the collector. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And also Arlie Ermey as the the guy who played Sergeant Hartman, or Gunnery Sergeant Hartman in Full Metal Jacket. He plays the little toy soldier people.
I mean, stuff like that is just perfect. Like, because someone in the audience in 1995 would have spotted that and been like, yes, that's great.
Yeah. Well done. And and also Laurie Metcalf, who is, you know, the great Laurie Metcalf as Andy's mom. She doesn't have a name, but she's Andy's mom. And I think that is, I think it's amazing that they were able to like have the same cast members for also for four as well. Because, you know,
talking about the fourth one. This is a trilogy episode. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's nice that they were able to have some consistency with having all the same actors in it. And I feel like that, I can imagine that a lot of the times that, because I feel like with a lot of voice work, you are alone in a booth doing stuff. But occasionally I've seen like stuff behind the scenes where you have some of the actors in the same room with you. But I feel, I don't know how, if they had them all together or separately, but I feel like the chemistry between them is very good, particularly in Toy Story 2 when they're out to try and save Woody, and also in Toy Story 3 when they're trying to escape from the scariest kindergarten in the world.
Right, right, yeah. Ooh, what's
Get
it called?
Sunnyside
Daycare or something?
Yeah, Sunnyside Daycare,
I,
yeah.
I keep thinking about it with when we put our kid in daycare. It's like, ooh. But yeah, the toys there look like they're being treated well and having a good time. You know, I've been thinking as we record this episode that to infinity and beyond, you know, that's a hell of a goal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Buzz Lightyears of this world are not going to be able to achieve their goals without a certain amount of focus on, you know... getting there. And you know, they're not, Buzz Lightyear's not the only character in Toy Story who needs focus. You know, those toys have got to operate at a very, very high level of alertness, you know, because they're mucking around and doing whatever they're doing. And then the people come in and they all have to freeze and get back in the positions that they were in before. So that's two things they have to be alert for. They have to be alert enough to listen out for the humans, and then they have to remember where they were. Now, before I discovered Magic Mind, I wouldn't have been able to do that. But now I feel like I might stand a better chance because thanks to the world's first mental performance shot, I feel like I might be able to, you know, if I had to, when my humans came home, assuming that I was a toy, quickly like run over into the corner and just flop I in the exact position that they left me in, I feel like I might be able to do that. The reason is that, you know, unlike coffee, for example, which makes you jittery and raises your blood pressure and does all sorts of other things, this energy shot, Magic Mind, is entirely natural and sort of works with your system in a sort of holistic way to just sort of improve your entire feeling and your entire approach to energy and focus. I was such a like coffee head before, but now I am a convert, and now I'm trying to convert all of you lot. So yeah, what is Magic Mind? It's an all natural little juice shot. Tastes great. It's got your matcha in it. It's got your Bacopa Monieri. This is my new favorite ingredient. It stops impulsivity. So like maybe Sid could use this. It's a nootropic. It improves attention span. You know, I think Sid is probably overly medicated with the traditional Western medicine. I think he should try some Bacopa Monieri. He should try Magic Mind. Throw in some ashwagandha, which has been used for thousands of years to reduce stress and anxiety. And you are well on your way to feeling a lot better and being a lot more productive. So if you want to get on the Magic Mind train, you should use our very special offer code, which is HOMES20. Where do you use that offer code? You use it at www.magicmind.com/HOMES. HOMES20. HOLMES20. MagicMind.com/HOMES. It is being talked about by the Kardashians. Come on! They've got to be right. They know everything. And people I've not heard of, but I bet you've heard of, like Nate Florence, are talking about it on their podcast. But you don't need to listen to those podcasts. Just listen to Holmes Movies, and you've got your offer code right there. It's a company that gives you a 100% money back guarantee with no questions asked. If you don't like it, they just refund you in a few hours. I like that. I stand behind it. I endorse this green stuff that can take you and me and all of us to infinity and beyond. Magic Mind. Reclaim your brain.
Sergeant?
Yes, sir.
Establish a recon post downstairs. Code Red, repeat. We are at Code Red. Recon plan, Charlie. Execute. Move, 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 move. It's a
big one.
Walt Disney Pictures presents...
Star Command, come in. Do you read me?
The story of two toys.
There seems to be no sign of intelligent life anywhere.
Hello?
Who ya?
Headed for a showdown.
My name is Woody. This is my spot. I am Buzz Lightyear. I come in peace.
You are a child's plaything.
You are a sad, strange little man.
And playing by their own rules.
Draw.
Fuck me again.
I don't like confrontations.
Buzz, look, an alien.
Where?
You're mocking me, aren't you?
So, do you want to go through and do like our list of things, or you know,
I do just... have one. I do have one little story. This is a little bit of Holmes Movies trivia for you.
A Toy Story story.
Toy Story trivia. So, do you know this production fiasco that happened with Toy Story 2?
No.
So basically what happened was the whole film, this is back in 1998, so this is like a year before, you know, animation films take a really long time to do. And
it came out when?
It came out in 1999, Toy Story 2.
Okay.
And the movie was, this was in 1998. So this is, you know, old school methods, a lot of big servers. And somehow someone managed to hit the wrong command and delete the whole film, like deleted about 90% of all the files of Toy Story 2.
Oh, you wouldn't want to be that person on that day, would you?
No, no.
All-star female. We're not angry, but we need the person to come. You're just like hiding it. Just like, oh God, it was me.
It was me. So, but lo and behold, a Pixar producer by the name of Galen Sussman, who she had actually backed up. She was the technical director at that point. She had backed up a copy of the film at her house because she was working from home while she was on maternity leave and basically saved the whole day.
Bloody hell.
So for all you people, independent filmmakers, always back your shit up. Like, I mean, I do that every time when I've worked sound. Like, I always give, like, when I've worked sound, I always give my card to, you know, I always work with two SD cards. I give one card to the people who are going to back up from the crew, and then I have my own personal hard drive where I back everything up. So in case anything happens, I have it as well, because there have been occasions where people...
How did she have room on her home device for the whole movie? I mean, they must have been like, she must have turned her, like, replaced her fridge with a server to make room for it. I mean, how, what, like,
but I don't know, it's just
no, anyway, lost to the stat, but still, it's a great story. Wonderful, yeah. Well, look, I think if we go through our little list, it gives us a chance to sort of delve into the movies in more detail. Okay, so best, what's the best film of the three?
Such a tough choice.
First one for me, just
I'm gonna say. Best film of the three for me, that was a real tongue twister there. Best film of the three for me is Toy Story 2.
Toy Story 2. Okay. Big call.
I just remember, I just think, like, when we watched that in the cinema in the Clapham Picture House with a full house, I just remember just having the biggest smile on my face the whole time. It just made me laugh and grin from ear to ear. And it was like, when we got it on DVD, I just couldn't stop watching Toy Story 2.
It is brilliant. And it is an amazing, sequel. I mean, and it's also one of those things where it's early enough in the Pixar story that it kind of had to work, and it does. And oh, it's so wonderful that it gives you that, and it sets up the third film so well. Like, it sets this idea of a trilogy up again with, why the fuck did they do a fourth one? But like, it's like the middle, it's like the first film sort of establishes things, the middle one puts it in crisis with the toys, you know, Woody being separated from the rest of the toys, and yeah. Then the third film is this, is like, it solves the riddle. Like, we talked about Return of the Jedi just sort of like finishing stuff off and it being a bit like you know, kind of a bit of a, like, disorganized whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas Toy Story 3 just like brings it home, you know, in this beautiful way. So yeah,
I mean,
nothing happens without the first film, and the first film is so, like, I think it gets my vote because of just the sheer level of originality, but also because of the like, it's just a cracking story, and I find it still just like super suspenseful and exciting when I watch it. I can't wait to foist it on my child. I really hope she likes it. What's the? I mean, this is like for a trilogy like Toy Story, it's easy to use this category with certain trilogies, but the worst of the, I mean, what I don't even want to use the word worst. The least good.
I mean, it would be. I mean, for me, I don't know. If I was going to rank them, I'd be like Toy Story 2, Toy Story 3, and then Toy Story 1. I think once Woody and Buzz are off on their sort of midnight run buddy movie mission to get back to Andy before they leave, I think that's when the film sort of takes off. It takes a bit of a while to get there and everything, but it's still a great film. I just think Toy Story 2 and Toy Story 3 are just take that world and just kind of just go into... they just take it into whole new levels. I think another thing is, maybe this is me being a little bit picky, but I feel like it's, I mean, the animation style, it's still quite rough it doesn't feel dated. I wouldn't say that, but it does. It still feels quite rough, and it's still them trying to figure it out. And then by like Toy Story 2, they've and Bug's Life, they've really like defined the look of a Pixar film.
Okay, no, I really I appreciate that explanation, because funny enough, my least favorite of the three, although I love all of them, is the second one. So it's kind of interesting that we've got a completely inverse, a take there. But I really like that. I really like the reasons you gave, and I kind of want to re-examine my feelings about the first one. So I'll wait until my kid's old enough, and then we can watch it, and probably watch it a million times. Okay, best line or your favorite line.
You are a toy!
Yes!
You are a child's plaything!
And I love that. That's talk about the existential bit. Like, that's an amazing moment. Where he just, like,
you are a sad, that, strange little man, and you have my pity.
Yeah, that whole exchange is incredible. So,
but it's the sort of, it's the wide shot of him, like, him, and then him going off in his little monologue, and then that sort of, it's the silence in between, and then him just kind of like the way his arms kind of extend out. I just think,
yeah,
I mean, Tom Hanks, I feel like he's great at, I mean, I'm imagining it, it's such a like physically daunting task, that whole thing of doing that,
of voicing, you mean,
of voicing it, yeah, just having,
I don't know if it's as physically daunting as doing Saving Private Ryan or Castaway, but no, I know,
no,
what you
but
mean.
It's like
you
using your voice and your whole body,
your
because
physicality, yeah
because you're it's like you're throwing everything else into it, like you probably look ridiculous while doing all this stuff.
That's true. I love that, and it sets up for me my favorite line, which is where where Buzz finally does discover that he's a toy, interestingly, through watching television and seeing himself in an advertisement. And which I feel like is such an interesting piece of commentary. I mean, you could do all kinds of pretentious essays about this, which we won't go into, but he tries to, I mean, this is, it gets kind of dark because he tries to fly, but it also, it feels like a suicide in some ways. Like, he throws himself off a high a high surface, and he crashes to the ground, and the next time we see him, he's at a tea party wearing a little hat and a pink apron, and he plays the scene as if he's drunk,
yeah,
which I think is such a great gag. And when Woody's leading him away from the tea party, at one point he just turns around and goes, "Don't you get it? Look at this hat. I'm Mrs. Nesbitt." And it's just, talk about good voice acting, but also like such a fun moment. Is I just love that line. So I'm glad that our favorite lines are sort of in conversation with one another. Okay, stupidest bit.
The stupidest bit for me is actually in Toy Story 2. It's during the blooper bit, which with, you know, looking at it in a post Harvey Weinstein world, it's the bit where they turn the box around and Stinky Pete is talking to the Barbie dolls and it's like, "Oh, I can bet you I can get you into Toy Story 3, which, yeah, you see that in like 1999. That was kind of funny. But like now, knowing the
just
whole,
it is very unfortunate, especially because he's a fat guy with a beard who kind of looks a bit like,
yeah, he's Harvey a tiny Weinstein. He's a tiny fat guy with a beard, and that whole, it's just, yeah,
tiny fat guy.
Yeah, what?
What's a tiny fat guy? I guess he's a tiny toy, but like, yeah,
tiny,
this
tiny
is an
little,
interesting. This is interesting. Oxymoron.
Yeah. So I don't think there's any stupid bit. There's no stupid bits in the films itself. It's just that bit is just.
Well, I don't know. So my stupidest bit is when the voice box gets broken and he turns Spanish, Buzz.
I
feel like it's just a bit dumb and they milk it a bit too long, and it's a bit like culturally, I'm not sure about that. So I kind of like it, but I also kind of don't. So that's my issue. It's hard because I just love these films so much to pick out something that I think is genuinely not working or dumb or whatever. So so love that. Okay, best bit.
Best bit for me, it's that chase scene in the first one where it's sort of them trying to catch up with the truck and then also being chased by the dog, which I think terrified me a little bit when I was little, especially in that bit when he's sleeping and then he hears them when his hook gets stuck, and then it plays Woody's like inside voice. So that whole, that's the best bit for me, and also just how it escalates and then, you know, trying to, you know, the battery's running low and then the rocket explodes, like that whole escalation. And then it, like, perfectly when they're flying away and the car is flying towards them and everyone's like, take cover. And then it's Mr. Potato Head. I think that's so funny.
Oh, where they hit Mr. Potato. Yeah, I love the way that Mr. Potato Head becomes. I mean, it's also because he's this, like, you know, he's such a bad actor in the story. I mean, like, he helps, like, discredit Woody, and he's such a, like, he's such a manipulative, and, like, you know, he and Mrs. Potato Head, like, represent the kind of, like, gullible middle American voter in some ways. So it's, like, great to see him get his comeuppance in some in that. But like with all Pixar stuff, they're never, no one ever is, like, ostracized, you know. No one is truly you know, beyond the pale. For me, the best bit is I just can't get past Pizza Planet and the aliens and the whole world in where they're in there. And that's the first bit where you really see them sort of out in the world trying to navigate it. And the creativity on display is just fabulous. And I love the aliens as, like, another group in this parallel world of toys, but ones who live under an entirely different code. They just worship the claw, and they just the whole thing with the claw is, but then the bit in the third film where they rescue them using the claw is like,
that's a good...
When I saw that in the cinema, I like gripped my forehead. I was like, they actually did this. They
that was a good payoff.
So not just a good payoff, it's a fucking amazing payoff. Like, can you think of many better, like, moments in a toy universe? And so they come in this scene as, like, a bit of a gag character, but then they become so central to the story is really great. I love the whole Pizza Planet, because it's a great bridging sequence. I include in that the bit where he yells at, I know that's a slightly different, but that whole sort of middle sequence where suddenly things get shaken up and they're out in the world, and the world is funny because they're also in the back of that pickup truck with the pizza delivery guy. And it's so lots going on, lots to love. Interesting that we both picked stuff from the first film. But they're all good bits. We're really picking stuff out of a hat at this point. MVP.
MVP, I would say Woody is the MVP, because I feel like he's
core of the show.
He's the heart of the thing, and he's the one that kind of I think he speaks for the audience, and he's the guy that keeps everything together. And it's, you know, he's a great character and a very well developed character as well. You see many stages of him, and Tom Hanks plays him, you know, very well.
Yeah, and he has some of that, like, classic the classic, like, Western feeling a sheriff who is trying to keep hold of his, like, troublesome community.
He's like James Stewart in The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance in some ways, slightly.
Yeah, he is a little bit, but he's also like Gary Cooper. I mean, in High Noon, he's got some of that, like, Western stuff in him. No, I think Woody is I love the idea of the character of Woody as the MVP. That's a really interesting one. I mean, for me, I know that there's lots of people involved, but John Lasseter is just such an important part of this story. So I know he's not just the director, but he's also involved in the writing, and he's just such a key part of bringing Pixar to bear. So I feel like without John Lasseter, you might have Toy Story, but it would look different. And I know there are lots of other hands involved in the making of this, but he's my MVP. Okay, who's your favorite character? Well, now is he actually you should actually have said Woody here, maybe, because MVP was actor or crew member. But okay, you've been unconventional. We'll let you get away with that. Who's your favorite character?
My favorite character is Rex, because I
knew you were going to say Rex, because Rex is you,
pretty much.
He's anxious. He's always panicking, and, like,
I don't like confrontations.
Yeah, exactly. That's you. Yes. Rex is perfect. I think my favorite character is probably Mr. Potato Head. So I think that's very in keeping with us. Okay. One image that defines the series.
It's that bit when they're flying in the sky.
Fucking bastard. That was what I picked as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're falling with style. That's again one of those. I love the way that they across the series and within individual films they do that, like with the claw, when they mirror stuff and stuff has different meaning at different points, and it's telegraphed enough that children will get it, but it's not so much that parents are like, yeah, well done. Like, you know, it's really good writing. And that is wonderful where they're on the where Buzz hits his thing and expands his wings to cut the rocket. Yeah. And then he is Buzz Lightyear, but he is also a toy, and their friendship is cemented in that moment. That's utterly beautiful. Like, it is such a great, like, it's proper punch there. So, like, I'm getting quite emotional talking about Toy Story. I love these films so dearly. They are just like, I mean, I guess as millennials as well, they're just like right in our sort of childhood whatever nexus, but yeah, gosh, I do love them. That so I'm picking that bit too. That's the bit that defines it for me. Well, this was fun.
It does make me want to watch them again.
I know, really does. I'm like, I want to go downstairs immediately and start watching Toy Story, but I can't.
I don't know what Toy Story 5 is going to be like, but yeah.
What? They're not doing another one, are they?
I think I don't know. They seem to be having like a sequel itis. Like, they have a few like coming out. I don't know. It just seems a little, I don't know. It just seems like four, you know, the first three films have a really complete trilogy, and the fourth one feels like a take it or leave it kind of thing. I don't mind four. It has its moments, but like, there's certain decisions that are made for some of the characters. I don't know if people would initially like,
I don't want to see it. I don't even want to know about it.
Yeah. There's some good moments. There's great. The animation is fantastic. Like, it's amazing animation. I just think, like, you know, it's kind of like a nice story, but at the same time, it's also kind of like a cash grab in some ways, but everyone involved does fantastic work.
Did you say a cash crab?
Cash grab.
Oh, cash grab. So I thought, like, because cash cow is obviously a thing. And I was like, what's a cash grab? Oh, like, yeah, cash grab. Yes.
I'm the cash crab.
It just feels more, it's like more stuff just for the sake of it. And that's my least favorite thing about modern content. That just more is better, like Star Wars. More Star Wars, more. And it's like, no, can we
did
have
make
just...
a billion? It was one of those films. It was like Disney had like at least four or five films that made $1 billion in 2019. And they were all. They were, one of them was Star Wars, one of them was Guy Ritchie's Aladdin, which is not great. The other one was The Lion King, the one with the, you know, actual realistic animals with no emotion on their faces, and then Toy Story 4, and I can't remember what the other one was.
I hate that. That's a horrible fact on which to end. So let us say instead that I think Toy Story is true poetry, and I think it is the best. I don't know. Maybe you can talk about Miyazaki. You can talk about certain other Disney films. But for me, Toy Story is the best blend of entertainment for kids and older kids, by which I mean adults. It is the most accessible, the most broad, but also the most heartfelt of this kind of movie that I think I can name. Even among Pixar films, I think the Toy Stories movies have a particular just power, I guess. They stand the test of time as well. They sort of harken back while also being very sort of cutting edge, and they are just marvelous movies. And if you don't like them, you've got something wrong with your soul. So anyway, I hope people have enjoyed that. We'll be back soon with another trilogy episode, but we've also got an interesting interview in the works, so more on that.
Yes,
more on that later. We'll be doing it on Movies and Me conversations, and all that jazz.
That's a good film.
It is. Okay, Instagram, and the Instagram is where it's happening right now, folks.
Yeah.
Our Instagram account, Holmes Movies Pod. Yeah, Holmes Movies Pod is where we do most of our posting, because Twitter can do one, frankly. It just feels like a dead space for people who are drunk on the same tea that Buzz Lightyear is drinking in that scene. Like, so yeah, our Instagram, we try and post a few times a week. We post about favorite films. We post movie trivia. I do my Thirsty Thursday image each week, and we also have podcast news and stuff on there. It's really the community that we're trying to get going. It's like, what could be better for talking about films than an actual sort of visual medium? And so we try, and obviously we know that we don't own the images, but we try and share images from films that we love and get people excited about them as well. I like our Instagram account, and I think you would too. So if you're going to engage with us on social media, do it there, or do it on Letterboxd, which you are much better at using than I am, but which yes. is just the must-have social media item for movie fans, right?
Yes, it is. It's a great site. And I do have a... I also
They're not
have,
a sponsor, by the way.
Not a sponsor, no. I do have
Yet.
I do have a Pixar film ranking. I made a list of how I ranked the Pixar film, so I might add that to the list, to the episode description, so you can check that out and maybe agree or disagree with where I put certain things. I've put the feature films. The short films, I guess, are another sort of category.
Yeah, it's hard to put those up against feature length stuff, but yeah.
I will say this, some of their short films are that, like, they would always show the short films before the features, and they are, some of them are genius. Like, some of them are really good, and some of them do tug at the heartstrings really well.
I need to revisit that. All right, well, I guess we can go about our day. Have a good one, folks.
Yeah, have a good one. Bye.
Bye-bye.